Welcome to Calvary Church, where we are dedicated to loving God and loving people. If you want to know more about us, please check us out online at calvary.ca. Now let's check out this week's message.
Jesus, in Matthew chapter 25, gives us one of his most challenging and most popular parables, the parable of the talents. Now, it's quite long, so allow me to just summarize it for you, because it'll be familiar to probably most of you who've been kicking around church for a hot minute. Story goes like this. A master is going out of town, and before he does, he calls three servants to himself, and he entrusts each of his servants with a tremendous amount of wealth. He gives to one servant one talent, to another servant two talents, to another servant five talents. Now, I did a little digging. I thought this was kind of funny. A talent is worth 6,000 denarius, and a denarius is worth one day's work. So in British Columbia, in Surrey, no less, as of today, one day's wage is $294 Canadian. So times that by 6,000 to get what the worth of a talent would be. And the master entrusts the smallest amount, which is $1,764,000 to one servant, and then twice $1,764,000 to the second servant, and then five times $1,764,000 to the third servant, which is about $8.8 or $8.9 million. So this is a tremendous sum. And he says in the parable that he gives them each according to their own ability, which means what? It means that they can handle it. I mean, the master knows his servants. He knows what they can handle. Some can handle a lot. Some can, actually, all three of them can handle a lot. I don't think I've been entrusted with $1.7 million, but they can all handle a lot, and some can handle a tremendous amount. And then the master goes away. Well, while the master's gone, the servant who's got five talents makes some trades, invests them. He gets five talents back for a total of 10. The servant who's got two talents, he goes out and does some things. He makes two more talents for a total of four. But the third servant, he didn't do anything. He just hides his talent. Master comes back, finds out the first servant has multiplied what he's been given from 5 to 10. He says, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been entrusted with little, and now you will be entrusted with much. And this is my favorite line, perhaps in the whole parable. And he says, enter into the joy of your master. The reward is the joy of the master. And you know a little bit about the master through this parable. The master is one who gives lavishly. To enter into the joy of one who gives lavishly is what? It's to become somebody who enjoys giving lavishly, somebody who is a super abundant, hyper generous, almost reckless giver. And then the second person comes up and they have their two talents. Master says, show me what you did. He says, I earned two more. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been entrusted with little. Now you'll be entrusted with much. Enter into the joy of your master. And then to the third servant, what did you do, big guy? How'd it go? Well, master, the guy says, I knew that you were a harsh man. How'd you know that? That's not in the parable anywhere. Reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter. Again, none of that information is in the parable. Everything we know about the master is that he gives lavishly. But the perspective of this third servant, whether he's telling the truth or not, the at least what's recorded, the perspective is like, I have this impression of you that you kind of suck. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here it is. Back to you. Here you go. So proud of myself. And the master says, you wicked and lazy servant. He goes on to say, if you knew I was harsh, why didn't you just invest it in a bank? We could have got a modest rate of return, but no. Instead, you squandered it. What strikes me most about this parable is that there's like no middle ground. You get well done or wicked and lazy. That's a parable about stewardship. It's a parable, of course, connected to how we use our money. But today I want to talk about the stewardship of three things. Money, misery, and your moment. Hey, grace and peace, everybody. I'm Dave McDonald. I am a son of your church, a son of Calvary. It's great to be with you, even though I'm digitally with you. Man, I grew up at that church. I grew up running around the halls of that church. I served at that church. I got baptized at that church. I got ordained at that church. I was a pastor of that church until 2005 when I moved to the United States and pastored in Michigan. And everything I think I know about the life of the Spirit and understanding God really happened probably in the very room you're sitting in while you watch watch this right now. And I'm so grateful to be sharing with you, so grateful to Pastor Steve for the invitation, and grateful to just share with you what I've learned first about money. And this parable is not just about money, but it's not about less than money. You can't escape that this is a parable about what we do with the financial resources God has entrusted to our care. What kind of stewards are we? And I learned a lot about stewardship at our church at Calvary. I learned from my dad that every dollar is comprised of 10 dimes, and the first dime goes to the Lord. I learned from my great friend Vince McLaren that we give 10% of what we earn, of our gross earnings. We give 10% of what we earn to the church, and we give an additional 10% to missions. I've never done less than that. I'm 49 years old. Vince taught me that when I was 17. I've never done less than that. But I want to tell you, I realize it's hard. Now, when I became a senior pastor, I got access to giving records, which was kind of a weird thing, you know, and it's your responsibility to see, you know, what the church has and what the church can work with, the budget and do all that stuff. I was shocked that so few Christians tithe. I thought maybe it was just that one church. But the reality is about 3% of all American Christians give 10% or more. Now, most Christians would say that they know they're supposed to tithe. And most Christians would say, well, I don't quite do it all the time. But apparently 97% of Christians don't do that. That's a big number. Now, I don't typically advocate tithing. I think tithing is a good floor, but a bad ceiling. I mean, I think tithing is like a good starting point. But I realize, if you don't give anything, it's tough to give 10%. I mean, 10% is costly. And the more you make and the longer you've been making it, the idea that you got to pay, I don't know, like a tax to the church seems ridiculous. But remember, you're not paying, which is a funny verb in and of itself for something like this. You're not paying to the church. You're giving it to the Lord. And I want to tell you why this is so important to me. And I know it's weird to have a guest speaker, you know, start out by talking about tithing. I was like, Lord, are you really sure you want me to say it? Like, am I just hearing things? But no, I think God's leading me to share this with you, and maybe it'll become apparent why. I've been through a bumpy couple of years, and I was a pastor until into 2021, and then I went to work full-time for a missions organization, Fasares, where we train pastors, leaders, and innovators from all over the world. It's amazing. It's the great joy of my life, and we've had over 1,200 pastors come in from all over the world to the retreat center that we run in Jackson, Michigan, and it's been amazing. But, you know, running a charity, kind of like running a church, is tricky. You don't always have the funds that you need, and I went through some setbacks, and there was a long time that I wasn't getting paid at all. Well, some of you know my story. You know that I moved to Detroit. You know that my whole life was in crazy upheaval, and I hadn't been paid in months. And I remember sitting in this little church, a church that I now call home, and just sitting there going, like, I haven't written a check to my church ever, like to this little church that I've been going to for a few months. Now, I hadn't been paid in longer than that. The charity was in some financial straits, and there was lots of people that owed me money for contract work that I'd done, but I just hadn't got paid, so I hadn't given anything. And I felt God speak to me and say, I want you to write a check for your church today that would be equivalent to your tithe if you were getting handsomely compensated for your work at Fasares. And I said, Lord, I don't have food in my house. I don't have water. I don't have electricity. I don't have plumbing. I'm sick, and I don't have health care, and I can't go to the doctor. I'm sitting in church covered in bandages because I have an infection. And the gas gauge on my truck says empty, and I barely made it to church. And the Lord said, David, you believe it or you don't. So I took out my checkbook, and I wrote a check to the church for what the tithe and offering would be if I was getting paid, and there wasn't enough money in my bank to cover it. I thought, Lord, I don't feel good about writing fake checks to churches. But I was obedient. I did it. And the next day, one of the contracts for which I had yet to be paid came in, and it was enough money to cover the check. And the next Sunday, the Lord said, David, I want you to write a check for the tithe that you would pay if you were getting paid. And I said, okay, Lord, two for two. Here we go. And the next day, after I wrote the check, I got paid for another contract that I had already done the work for, and just, you know, the invoice was outstanding. And it went so on and so on and so on for months and months and months, until finally, not only was the place where I'm able to work, where I worked, start able to pay me, but they were able to pay me handsomely. Now, that was almost 2 years ago. That was in September of 2024. But I can testify to the fact that you really cannot outgive the Lord. I can testify to the fact that when God gives you two talents or five talents or one talent or no talent, when God gives you a schmuck and some tattoos, that when you honor the Lord, man, he's going to take care of you. He is going to take care of you. Now, again, there's lots that we could say about all this, but let me just say that giving is a joy and a privilege. Giving is how we co-sign the will of God. I mean, you see all these problems in the whole world. You see out there, you know, homelessness, you see starvation, you see lack of education, you see churches collapsing and falling apart, and you think, man, what is God doing about this? Well, God's sending you and me. And he's saying, you can help with your time. You can help with your insight. You can help with your wisdom. You can help with your devotion. You can also help with money. Money is how we co-sign the will of God, because generosity fuels the mission. When we write checks to our local church, when we support missions agencies, when we get involved in charitable causes, all of those things make a difference. It's like us saying, Lord, I see this and I realize that if I'm seeing it, you're letting me see it. He who has eyes, let him see. He who has ears, let him hear. And this is my call. This is my responsibility to reach out and make a difference. So remember, everything you got because the Lord gave it to you. He entrusted it to your care. You are a steward of what you own. Wealth is not a trophy. It's a trust. It's something that God has given to us that we might use in cooperation with God's Holy Spirit to heal the world. And you only got it while you're here. So you might as well make the most of it. And if you don't know how to start, I always say, start small. If you don't give anything, give something. Once you give something, give a percentage of your income so that whatever you're doing is tied to whatever God is doing in his life. And then increase that percentage from 2%, 3%. You know, increase it once a year, twice a year, whatever, till you get up to 10%. And then now you get to know the joy of giving generously. You get to learn about the privileges of special offerings, blessings, gifts, momentary things. You get to pay for somebody's mission trip. You get to finance a vacation Bible school. You get to send a kid to seminary and get them trained in the way of God. Pay for a master's program for somebody. Become a patron of local ministers and people who are sponsored in the work of Christ. I mean, you can do so much. Your imagination is the limit when you begin to cooperate with God. And truth is, we are hardwired to experience the joy of our master. When we take God's resources and cooperate in God's mission, we experience God's great joy. And that's just really the beginning of what this parable about stewardship means. But of course, it's not the end of it. And as I was praying and thinking, Lord, are you sure you want me to talk about stewardship? And it feels weird to just talk about money. I felt the Lord say, no, Dave, there's other things people got to steward. Not the least of which is their pain, their story, their misery. I mean, the stuff they have been through. And I was reading in 1 Peter chapter 4, it says, like good stewards of the manifold grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. What gifts have we received? Well, you know, because some people are very talented in the guitar, musicians, some people are talented with business, but everybody has the gift of pain. I mean, with the right mindset, pain is a gift. Pain is a teacher. Pain is a profound teacher. Pain is universal. Everybody suffers. Everybody goes through it. And sometimes we get gifts of joys and triumphs, and sometimes we get gifts of loss and loneliness. But the lessons we learn when we're lost and we're lonely, and those lessons go deep. Those lessons go really, really deep. And that's why we have to be good stewards of our pain, because everybody suffers, but not everybody suffers well. Some of us heal, and some of us fetishize our wounds. We rejoice in being victims. We go, oh, look at all the bad things that are happening to me. Poor me. And 4 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, we're still talking about the bad things that happened in 1992 or 2006 or 2026. We never allow the work of God to heal us. Some of us keep our wounds clean. We get hurt by the church. We get hurt by organized religion. We get hurt by a pastor. We get hurt by close friends. We feel betrayed. We have people turn their backs on us. We have our whole life turn upside down. We go through a divorce. We lose our business. Whatever it is, we get hurt. And some of us go, man, When I go through this hurt, I have to own that some of this is my fault. Some of this I brought on me, even if it's a small percentage part of it. I got to own that some of this is mine, and I got to own the fact that regardless of what's mine and what's not mine, I got to keep this wound clean. That means when you have those little imaginary arguments You know, and you're fighting back in the shower, in the car, and you're winning every argument, you know, because the other people are just made up in your mind, you know, and you're telling them what you should always think. No, that's the time to take every thought captive and go, my justifications, my defensiveness, my absolute certainty that I'm right and they're wrong. No, those things are poisoning the wound. See, you've been hurt, but all those thoughts, all those feelings, that's poison. It gets in the wound, it gets there, festers, it grows, and you stay sick for longer. You stay angry for longer. That's why we gotta learn to let go, to forgive, to release people from the burden of our hate and our resentment. And I'm gonna share with you two scriptures that really changed how I think about pain, and then also the sermon notes from my very first sermon ever preached in that room at Calvary Church. But the first scripture is still in 1 Peter chapter 12 and 13, or verse 12 and 13 of chapter 4. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal taking place among you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. That's the most hilarious thing. Every time I feel like somebody stabbed me in the back, every time I experience a betrayal, every time I experience, you know, bad news or a setback, I'm always surprised. And the surprise is like the worst part of the pain. I can't believe they did that. How did that even happen? How did we arrive at this? What is going on? The surprise is what takes me out at the knees. And Peter is saying, don't be surprised, as though you're something special. Hey, Snowflake, Princess, Dave McDonald, you cutesy little dude, you're just like everybody else. In the same way that everybody goes through it, you're going to go through it, man. Don't be surprised at the fiery ordeal. Yeah, because this thing that you're going through, it's real. Like, it's fiery, and it's an ordeal. That's terrible. They don't make a cream for that. All they make is prayer. Like, you're going to go through some stuff. Guaranteed. That's why Jesus said, in this life, you will have trouble. That's why Jesus said, if they did it to the servant or to the master, they're going to do it to the servant. The servant's not greater than his master. If they did it to me, they're going to do it to you. You're going to go through some stuff, man. But it's there, Peter says, to test you. Find out what you're worth. Remember in Matthew 25, the master gives the talents to his servants, each according to their ability, meaning he knows you can handle it. The same is true with pain. It'll break you, but it is not authored to destroy you. It is a fiery ordeal that will test you, but you're going to come through it with God's help, for God's glory. You're going to come through it. Peter goes on. He says, insofar as you are sharing Christ's sufferings, rejoice, so that you may also be glad and shout for joy in his glory. When we share in his sufferings, we also share in his glory. See, suffering is the path to glory. Biblically, glory is defined as beauty compounded by achievement. You know, nobody gets glory if they achieve something great and they're a jerk about it. I mean, you know, right now we have the World Cup of soccer on, of football on. You know, if the team that wins the whole tournament gets up and talks trash about everybody else and acts shamefully and disrespectfully to everybody else, you're not going to say that was a glorious victory. You're going to say they were a really good soccer team, but they're kind of jerks. No, glory comes when you do an amazing thing. And you do it in an amazing way. Jesus suffered. And the way he suffered shows all of us how to suffer. As he's forgiving the people who are killing him, as he's extending grace to the people who are mocking him, as he is over and over and over again showing other people what it means to suffer well. And on the far side of it, when he's conquered death, when he's risen to new life, when he's gathered his followers and he's anointed them and he's breathed his breath on them and sent them out into the world, that when he's accomplished it all, the thing that makes it so amazing is how he behaved when the world was against him. How he behaved when the chips were down. How he behaved, how he chose to live when everybody wanted to kill him. So now you're in the middle of whatever fiery trial you're going through, you're in the middle of whatever suffering you're going through, and you got to realize, man, your kids are watching. When I was going through it, I just kept thinking, man, I can't make this better, but I can make it a whole lot worse. I got to just gut it out, and the way I gut it out will testify to my children, because they're watching, and my friends are watching, and my father is watching. Everybody's watching to see how I do with this test. And I called a good friend of mine. You know, we both have this connection about, you know, the spirituality of the body and, you know, fitness and how God talks to us about, you know, the worth of our bodies. And he's been sick for a long time. He's at the Mayo Clinic. And I called him up and I was checking out how he was doing. And he said, Dave, they don't have a diagnosis for me. Here I am at arguably the best hospital in the world. It's where they diagnose the undiagnosable and cure the incurable. And I'm not cured and I'm not diagnosed. I'm sick and I'm in a lot of pain. And I was expressing my sympathy, and he said, no, Dave, you don't understand. He said, I was reading in the book of Revelation, chapter 3, verse 18, in the middle of the letter to the church in Laodicea. And in that, Jesus, the angel, tells people who are suffering to buy gold in the fire. Buy gold in the fire. See, sometimes when you're in the fire, you can buy gold. You can find great worth and value. And some gold is only available for purchase when you're in the fire. And so what my friend Sean was telling me, he's like, look, I'm going through this, and there are lessons God wants to teach me in the midst of this confusion, frustration, and pain that I cannot learn when life is good or when life is normal. Right now, Jesus is telling me, he says, to buy gold from him, refined by the fire, meaning have conversations with me, bring me your pain, bring me your frustration, be a good steward of this horrible nonsense you're going through so that you can get spiritual wisdom, insight, maturity, sanctification, glorification, beautification. You get all this great stuff that you can't otherwise have. And when you look at it that way, you realize, oh man, I've got to submit to this suffering. I got to go through this. And I'm going to go through it. That's a guarantee. But I'm only going to grow through it if I keep looking to Christ to buy gold refined by the fire. See, made me think of my first sermon. I'll tell you a funny story. I preached my first sermon, I think it was 1996, you know, up in the platform at Calvary there and the new building, you know, after we built the addition, and we didn't meet in the Schroeder Hall anymore, and now we met in the auditorium. And I never preached a full sermon before for adults. I only preached to college kids and high school kids. And so I bought a book of sermon outlines. Now, in the first sermon I ever preached, the title was Pain May Be Part of the Plan. And in the little notes, it said, the full fragrance of a rose is only released when the rose is crushed. And the precious oil of the olive is only released when the olive itself is pressed. And gold is only pure when it has been refined by the fire. And as I was talking to my friend Sean, I was thinking about 1 Peter, I was thinking about Revelation, the Lord brought back to me my own plagiarized first sermon. Say, see, Dave, your whole life I've been preparing you for this. Your whole life I've been preparing you for this. And it's funny because then it took me back to Matthew, and I was noticing some details in this parable that I'd never noticed before. Like, first and foremost, the master gives everybody this tremendous sum of money and then never asks for any of it back. Like, the one guy who gets 5 talents, he earns 5 more, he gets to keep them. Like, the master doesn't get, you know, $8.9 million back. He doesn't get whatever double $8.9 million is. He doesn't get pretty much $20 million back. And even the guy who buries his talent, doesn't invest it. When the master takes the talent away, the master doesn't keep the talent. The master gives it to the person who's experiencing it. And you realize the master is over the top in his desire to bless his people. And I don't think I ever really noticed that before, because there's some harsh language in there. But then you realize, no, that harsh language is the mindset of the miserly servant. Nowhere are we told that the master actually does, you know, gather seed where he did not scatter. No, that's just the perspective of the poor, sad little servant. And I go, how often is that my perspective? Where I'm so afraid that God is going to be mad at me if I screw it up. I'm so afraid that God is up there with a lightning bolt just ready to lance me, that I miss out on the invitation to great joy. Remember, You enter into the joy of your master. This is the reward, the joy of the master, of living abundantly and generously. That's the invitation. And it's only when we choose to think of God as fiery and judgmental and harsh that we miss out on the invitation. We become so afraid of what God might do to us that we miss out on the invitation of what God wants to do through us. And as I was thinking about all this, I was like, oh my gosh, we've just been missing the point. We're just trying to sin less in hopes that, you know, God can save some grace for the next idiot, when in actual fact, God just wants to bless his children super abundantly. And then it made me think, oh man, you know, the time really is short. I'm 49. I don't know how much longer I got to live, but it's probably not another 49 years. I don't know how old you are, but man, today could be your day. I mean, you don't look good. I'm worried about you. None of us are in control of how much time we got left. And then we got to realize that this life, stewarding this life, stewarding this moment while we're alive, that's everything. What are you going to do with the things that God has entrusted to your care? Your money, your misery, and this moment. Because here's the truth, and I don't know that a lot of people that will tell you this, so please forgive me if I'm bursting your bubble. But when you go to heaven, like, they don't need you there. Heaven's fixed. I know the guy who runs it. He's pretty sharp, okay? So, like, your bright ideas, that they don't need them in heaven. You don't need courage in heaven. Nothing's going to be scary there, so you don't ever need to be brave. Courage is for this life. God is sponsoring you, filling you with his Holy Spirit, saying, get out there, take a risk, go for it. That's for right now. What are you going to do when you die and you stand before the Lord and he says, hey, great job, high five, come on in. Oh, before you do, let me just show you what you could have done if you had any guts. I mean, you were so worried about hanging on to your talent that you missed out on all these things I prepared for you. Good works I prepared for you before the foundation of the world. Good works for you to perform. Good works for you to enjoy. I know you really cared about, you know, ministers and ministries. I know you really cared about the future of the church and church planting. I know you really cared about Vacation Bible School. I know you really cared about those foreign mission trips. You didn't do anything with them, though, because you were scared. So anyway, come on in and make yourself a home. See, then you realize, like, we've only got this for eternity. We don't need our gifts in heaven. We don't need our money in heaven. In heaven, all our misery, our wounds, our suffering, it'll all be resolved. We don't need resilience. We don't need forbearance. We don't need long suffering in heaven. The gifts that God gives us, he gives to us for this life before we die, not after. You don't need faith in heaven. You don't need hope in heaven. Heaven is all consummation. You need faith now. You need hope now. You need courage now to do the things the Lord has placed within you to perform. And so I keep asking myself, Lord, what am I going to do with my money, my misery, my moment? Am I going to be bold? Am I going to be brave? Am I going to take risks? Or am I going to cower and be small? Hey, grace and peace, everybody. Again, I'm Dave McDonald. It's a real privilege to be with you. Thanks so much for spending time with me here in my mermaid office in Detroit, Michigan. And I pray God's richest blessings on you and all that you do. Cheers.